Hello, everyone. You're listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Dan Uman, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. And have I got a story for you today? This week, we are looking at Spider-Man 2, a 2004 American superhero film directed by Sam Raimi and written by Alvin Sargent from a story by Alfred Goh, Miles Miller, and Michael Chabon. Based on the fictional Marvel Comics character of the same name, it is the second installment in the Spider-Man trilogy and a sequel to 2002's Spider-Man. It stars Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker and Spider-Man, Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane Watson, James Franco as Harry Osborn, Alfred Molina as Dr. Otto Octavius and Dr. Octopus, Rosemary Harris as Aunt May, and Donna Murphy as Rosalie Octavius. Spider-Man 2 was released on June 30th, 2004, to critical acclaim. It won the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects and was also nominated for Best Sound Mixing and Best Sound Editing. The sequel is also considered to be one of the most influential and best superhero films of all time. Its success also led to the final installment of the original Spider-Man trilogy, Spider-Man 3. On this show, we will be discussing the plot summaries, production background, character arcs, production techniques, and what storytellers and writers can learn from each film and television season that is chosen for the week. So if you would like to avoid potential spoilers, please tune out now. I will now give a brief recap of the overall plot of Spider-Man 2. 2 years after Norman Osborn's death, Peter Parker, aka the superhero Spider-Man, is estranged from both his love interest Mary Jane Watson and his best friend Harry Osborn. He also discovers that his Aunt May is facing eviction. He finds himself suffering temporary but recurring losses of his powers, often in life-threatening situations. Harry, who is now head of Oscorp's Genetic and Scientific Research Division, is sponsoring a fusion power project by nuclear scientist Otto Octavius, who befriends and mentors Peter. While handling hazardous materials, Octavius wears a harness of powerful robotic tentacle arms with artificial intelligence. During a public demonstration that Peter and Harry attend, a power spike causes the fusion reactor to destabilize. Octavius refuses to shut down the reactor, which goes critical, killing his wife and burning the inhibitor chip, blocking the arms from his nervous system. Peter, as Spider-Man, shuts the experiment down, destroying it in the process. Later, at a hospital, doctors prepare to surgically remove Octavius's harness. Without the inhibitor chip, the now sentient arms defend themselves by killing the doctors. Upon regaining consciousness and seeing the carnage, Octavius escapes and takes refuge at a harbor. Becoming increasingly influenced by the arms AI, he decides to retry his experiment. He robs a bank to fund a second experiment. Peter and May coincidentally are there, and Octavius takes May hostage. Peter rescues her, but Octavius flees with the stolen money. The Daily Bugle subsequently dubs the scientist Dr. Octopus. Mary Jane becomes engaged to astronaut John Jameson, the son of Bugle editor J. Jonah Jameson. Peter suffers an emotional breakdown from this and his inability to balance his life, and he eventually completely loses his powers. He quits being Spider-Man, returns to his normal life, and attempts to reconcile with Mary Jane, but with little success. A garbage man brings Peter's costume to Jameson, who takes credit for driving Spider-Man into hiding. Peter tells May the truth behind his Uncle Ben's death and how he is responsible. After some time, May finally forgives him, but the rise in New York City crime rates starts to worry Peter. Requiring the isotope tritium to fuel his reactor, Octavius visits Harry to demand it. Harry agrees in exchange for Spider-Man, whom he believes is responsible for Norman's death. He tells Octavius to seek Peter, who Harry believes is friends with Spider-Man, but tells Octavius not to harm him. Octavius locates Peter, tells him to find Spider-Man, and captures Mary Jane in the process. Her endangerment leads to Peter's powers resurrecting. As Jameson admits that he was wrong about Spider-Man, Peter steals his costume back from the Bugle and goes after Octavius. As Peter battles Octavius, they fall onto a New York City subway train. Octavius sabotages the controls and leaves Peter to save the passengers, which he does at a great physical toll. When he faints from exhaustion, the grateful passengers save him from falling and bring him into the train. Seeing his unmasked face, but promising to keep their knowledge hidden. They unsuccessfully try to protect him when Octavius returns to capture Peter, whom Octavius delivers to Harry. After giving Octavius the tritium, Harry prepares to kill Spider-Man, only to be shocked to see Peter under the mask. Peter convinces Harry to direct him to Octavius' lair, as bigger things are at stake. As Peter arrives at the doctor's waterfront laboratory and attempts to rescue Mary Jane discreetly, Octavius discovers him and they battle as the nuclear reaction swells and starts threatening the city. Peter ultimately subdues Octavius, reveals his identity, and persuades Octavius to let his dream go for the greater good. Octavius commands the tentacles to obey him and gives his life to destroy the experiment. Mary Jane sees Peter's true identity and feelings, which he says is why they cannot be together. Peter returns Mary Jane to John and leaves. Harry is later visited by a vision of his father in a mirror, pleading for Harry to avenge his death. Enraged, Harry shatters the mirror, inadvertently revealing a secret room containing prototypes of the Green Goblin's equipment. On her wedding day, Mary Jane abandons John at the altar and runs to Peter's apartment. After they kiss, they hear police sirens, and Mary Jane encourages him to go help his Spider-Man. The film ends with Spider-Man taking a final triumphant swing across the cityscape, with Mary Jane watching as he goes off to continue to be Spider-Man. In our next segment, we will be discussing the production background of the film and how it helps tie into the overall story and character arc of Peter Parker and Spider-Man. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Dana Mon, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Hello, everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Dan Uman, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. We have been looking at Spider-Man 2, and we have just recapped the overall plot of the film's story. Now I will be discussing the production background behind making the film in the first place. After immediately wrapping up production on the first Spider-Man film, director Sam Raimi started work on the sequel. In April 2002, Sony hired Alfred Goh and Miles Miller of Smallville fame to write a script with Dr. Octopus, the Lizard, Black Cat, and New Goblin as the villains. A few months later, Sony Pictures officially announced a sequel for 2004. Originally entitled The Amazing Spider-Man, after the character's main comic book title, it was given a budget of $200 million. A month later, David Koepp was added to co-write with Goh and Miller. Michael Chabon was also hired later to rewrite. His draft originally had a younger Doc Ock who becomes infatuated with Mary Jane. His mechanical arms would use endorphins to counteract the pain of being attached to his body. He would go on to injure two muggers on a date with Mary Jane, horrifying her, and in a resulting battle with Spider-Man, his tentacles would be fused together and the fusion would begin to kill him. In this script, it would have been revealed that Ock is the creator of the genetically altered spider from the first film and gives Peter the antidote to remove his powers. When Octavius is dying later on with his tentacles, he wants to extract Spider-Man's spine to save himself. This would lead to an alliance with Harry, a detail which made it into the finished film. Beforehand, Harry and the Daily Bugle would put a $10 million bounty on Spider-Man, causing the citizens to turn against him. Because of the dark and somewhat over-the-top story beats, producer Avi Arad eventually rejected this story altogether. Raimi would sift through the previous drafts done by Go, Miller, Coep, and Chabon, picking what he liked with screenwriter Alvin Sargent. He felt that thematically the film had to explore Peter's conflict with his personal wants against his responsibilities, exploring the positives and negatives of his chosen path, and how he ultimately decides that he can be happy as a heroic figure. Raimi stated the story was partly influenced by Superman 2, which also explored the titular hero giving up his responsibilities. Although the story takes some partial influence from Doc Ock's debut in 1964 and the 1966 storyline, If This Be My Destiny, the story was mostly inspired by the 1967 storyline Spider-Man No More, specifically The Amazing Spider-Man number 50. Fun fact, the name of this story also receives a mention in the film as Peter Parker, when giving up being Spider-Man and dumping his costume within a garbage can, does recite Spider-Man No More before walking away, recreating the same exact iconic cover and shot of Spider-Man walking away from a trash can full of his costume. It was decided that Doc Ock would be kept as the villain, as he was both a visually interesting villain who was a physical match for Spider-Man and a sympathetic figure with humanity, accompanied by the fact that the character had been repeatedly considered as a villain for the first film over the course of its 15-year development. All other villains would be pushed to the side and either discarded or later used within the next film. Raimi changed much of the character's backstory, however, adding the idea of Otto Octavius being a hero of Peter's and how their conflict was about trying to rescue him from his demons rather than kill him. Spider-Man 2 was shot on over 100 sets and locations, beginning with a pre-shoot on the Loop in Chicago during 2 days in November 2002. The crew acquired a train of 2200 series cars, placing 16 cameras for background shots of Spider-Man and Doc Ock's train fight. Principal photography began on April 21, 2003 in New York City and Chicago. The crew moved on May 13th to Los Angeles, shooting on 10 major sets created by production designer Neil Spezak. After the scare surrounding his back pains, Tobey Maguire relished performing many of his stunts, even creating a joke of it with Raimi creating the line, my back, as Spider-Man tries to regain his powers. Even Rosemary Harris took a turn, putting her stunt double out of work. In contrast, Alfred Molina joked that the stunt team would trick him into performing a stunt time and again. Filming was put on hiatus for 8 weeks in order to build Doc Ock's pier lair. It had been Spezak's idea to use a collapsed pier as Ock's lair, reflecting an exploded version of the previous lab and representing how Octavius's life had collapsed and grown more monstrous, evoking the cinema of Fritz Lang and the film The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Filming then resumed on that set, having taken 15 weeks to build, occupying Sony Stage 30. It was 60 feet by 120 feet long and 40 feet high, and a quarter-scale miniature was also built for the finale as it collapses. Filming was still going after Christmas 2003. A camera system called the Spider-Cam was used to allow filmmakers to express more of Spider-Man's worldview, at times dropping 50 stories and with shot lengths of just over 2,400 feet in New York or 3,200 feet in Los Angeles. For some shots, the camera would shoot at 6 frames per second for a faster playback increasing the sense of speed. Shots using the SpiderCam were pre-planned in digital versions of cities, and the camera's movement was controlled with motion control, making it highly cost-effective. The camera system was only used in the previous film for the film's final shot. Although roughly the same, costume designer James Acheson made numerous subtle changes to Spider-Man's costume. The colors were made richer and bolder, with the spider emblem being given more elegant lines and making it completely enlarged. The eye lenses were somewhat smaller, and the muscle suit underneath was made into pieces to give a better sense of movement for performers. The helmet Maguire wore under his mask was also improved, with better movement for the false jaw and magnetic eyepieces, which were easier to remove. To create Dr. Octopus's mechanical tentacles, EdgeFX was hired to create a corset, a metal and rubber girdle, a rubber spine, and four foam rubber tentacles, which were 8 feet long, which altogether weighed 100 pounds. The claws of each tentacle, which were dubbed death flowers, were controlled by a single puppeteer in a chair. Each tentacle was controlled by four people who rehearsed every scene with Molina to give a natural sense of movement, as if the tentacles were moving due to Octavius' muscle movement. On set, Molina referred to his tentacles as Larry, Harry, Moe, and Flo, with Flo being the top right tentacle, which performed the most work. EdgeFX was only hired to do scenes where Octavius carries his tentacles. CGI was used for when the tentacles carry Octavius. A 20-foot high rig held Molina to glide through his surroundings, with CG tentacles added later. The CG versions were scanned straight from the practical ones. However, using the practical versions was always preferred to save money, and each scene was always filmed first with EdgeFX's creations to see if CGI was truly necessary. Completing the illusion, the sound designers chose not to use servo sound effects, feeling it would rob the tentacles of the sense that they were part of Octavius's body, and instead used motorcycle chains and piano wires. Now, I just recapped the overall development, filming, and visual effects work done on Spider-Man 2. Join us for our next segment, where we will be discussing the character arc of Peter Parker and how it is bolstered by some of these production techniques. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Dana Mon, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Hello, everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Dana Mon, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. We have been looking at Spider-Man 2, and we have so far covered the overall plot summary of said film and the production background and history behind it as well. Now we will be discussing the overall character arc of Peter Parker and Spider-Man throughout this entire film's story and how some of the production techniques helped bolster the audience's engagement with said arc. Now, in order to analyze Peter's story and overall development within Spider-Man 2, I decided to ask multiple questions and answer said multiple questions while also taking a look at how some of the production techniques may have helped increase engagement between the audience and the overall story of Peter Parker. The first question I decided to ask myself was, what does Peter Parker do? He is an everyday young man who struggles to pay rent and stay committed to jobs and people while saving the city as Spider-Man. I mean, right off the bat, within the first 5 minutes of the film, you get all of this information through a subversive montage of him struggling to deliver a box full of pizzas to a certain company that refuses to pay afterward when he is later late. This results in him losing his job and almost losing his second job as photographer for Daily Bugle when he is saved when he is discovered to still have pictures of Spider-Man. Even after this opening montage of a scene, we discover that he has forgotten his own birthday. As he arrives at his house, his old house with Aunt May that still stays there and is currently facing eviction through some spotted mail that we see through his eyes. And we also see that Mary Jane Watson still has some feelings for him, and that Harry Osborn, his best friend, is also feeling still grudge-like toward him for supporting Spider-Man and wanting to take photos for him. Unaware that his best friend, Spider-Man, is also Peter Parker. Excuse me, I said that wrong. Unaware that Spider-Man is actually Peter Parker. Another question I asked myself was, what does Peter Parker want? Well, he wants to keep his jobs, pass his studies, be with MJ, fix his relationship with his best friend, and care for his Aunt May, all while being Spider-Man and protecting people at the same time. What kind of conflict does this create for him? Well, the internal conflict for Peter is that he wants what he feels like he cannot have, the aforementioned desires from before. He wants them in a perfect balance with each other, but cannot have them. The external conflict of this story regarding Peter is that he wants to save people as Spider-Man, including from the villain of the film, Dr. Otto Octavius, who is also known as Dr. Octopus, but can't due to his fluctuating use of his powers. How does what Peter does as a character tie in with his desires, external conflict, and internal conflict? In other words, how does this all tie together? Well, as long as Peter is Spider-Man, as long as he tries to do good, he will be punished for it. That is what the story establishes within the first 10 to 15 minutes. It is conveyed that because of Spider-Man, he gets fired from his job and struggles to hold on to the other. He fails to be on time for his studies. He cannot be with the woman he loves. He is losing his friendship with his best friend, and he's watching Aunt May suffer from loneliness, all from what he perceives to be Spider-Man's fault. So, what is Peter's eventual proposition to his problems? He decides to stop being Spider-Man midway through the story, since he is already losing his powers, and thinks that these problems are caused by him being Spider-Man in the first place. So what happens when Peter fulfills this proposition? He does gain more of that time that he lost from being Spider-Man in order to start remaining committed to taking care of his own problems one by one. But why doesn't it continue to work? Because the duality that he saw before of Peter Parker and Spider-Man leading to different lives is not the real problem that affects and creates all of his troubles. This is where the main film's theme of duality comes into play regarding Peter Parker himself. Peter's true solution is that he must embrace his destiny of becoming Spider-Man. He must embrace it again because he must embrace the fact that Peter Parker and Spider-Man are one. This solution is a direct opposing parallel to Dr. Otto Octavius, and otherwise known as Dr. Octopus, and his own character arc throughout the film. It is actually the reverse for him regarding Peter's, because when Peter and Otto Octavius first meet, which, by the way, in their first meeting, they're wearing specified, as it would be called in the film industry, costumes, but within the context of a movie, clothes. Their clothes slash costume choice are that Peter's wearing a blue shirt, while Otto is wearing a red shirt, and his wife is wearing an orangish brown-like shirt or blouse or sweater, whatever it was, conveying this sense of color association for the audience and how Peter is wearing a color that is more opposing to Otto, showcasing their differing motivations into the film as a form of foreshadowing later on. But what this can also be seen as is the fact that Peter and Otto are the same. Because of the chosen colors for the two to wear in this scene, blue and red, which are also Spider-Man colors, we, the audience, can also interpret this type of costume choice and design as a way of the filmmakers showing that Peter Parker, who is also a bit of a science whiz, as most of the other characters would call him, and Otto Octavius, who is the same, are basically really similar. And that is why we come to see this mentorship happen between Otto Octavius and Peter Parker. But by the end of the film, are all of Peter's problems solved? Well, not exactly. His friendship with Harry deteriorates beyond belief after Harry discovers that Peter Parker is truly Spider-Man. Aunt May does lose her home, and the silver lining is that she gets to live somewhere else, somewhere better suited to take care of her. And one of his mentors, and the villain of the film, Dr. Octopus, does eventually redeem himself by eventually splitting from his arms, splitting from his dream of wanting to conduct this experiment that ended up costing his wife's life in the first place in order to save the rest of New York, completing his own parallel journey, which involved separating himself instead of becoming one. Peter does regain his powers by the end, and Peter does eventually get to be with Mary Jane, even after she's discovered that he is Spider-Man, and even after she claims that she wants to be with him no matter what, because it is her own choice and not his for her to make. So in the end, Peter does continue to be Spider-Man even after his powers have come back. But what has he learned? Well, Peter has learned to live with the responsibility of being Spider-Man, with all of its ups and downs. A technique that I would like to mention before ending this next segment is the overall lighting and cinematography of the film. Throughout the film, we see that most of the scenes are lit with this warm, color-like glow, no matter day or night. We see that it is lit like this from the interpretive view of the filmmakers of wanting to focus more on the people of the film, the people behind the alter egos of not just Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus, but the people behind the alter egos of iconic characters such as Mary Jane Watson, Harry Osborn, and Aunt May, in order to help gain this sense of realism and realistic emotion that is conveyed from each of the actors' performances in each scene. That is why the filmmakers chose to light the cinematography and camera work this way. It is to highlight the emotive experiences that the audience feels with the characters and actors that are on screen. But something else I would like to point out is that in most of Peter and Mary Jane Watson scenes together, they are lit the most bright. They are lit the most, well, warm. And that's just to show exactly how close and intense of a relationship it is for the characters throughout the entire story, which I believe helps bolster the audience's engagement throughout the overall story itself, throughout the overall film. But I would like to talk more about what storytellers can learn in our next and final segment of Have I Got a Story for You? With your host, DJ Dan Umon on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Hello, everyone. We are back on our final segment of today's show on Have I Got a Story for You? With your host, DJ Dan Umon on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Today we have been looking at Spider-Man 2, the 2004 American superhero film based on the titular character of the same name. So far we have looked at the overall plot summary of Spider-Man 2, the production background and history behind the filmmaking itself, as well as, just recently, the character arc of Peter Parker and his overall development over the course of the film's story, and how several production techniques helped bolster the audience's engagement with said character arc. Now I would like to discuss what storytellers can learn from the film in its entirety. Well, I can't honestly say that, because learning things from films and television and any kind of story, really, well, anyone can learn a lot from anything. And I encourage those who are listening today to go back and watch this film for themselves in order to find more than I have spoken about today, in order to find more of what I may also see even now recording this. I encourage those that want to dive into the deep, deep rabbit hole of storytelling to go and do that, to go and find and challenge more about the filmmaking and story behind Spider-Man 2 in order to find more of what I have not spoken about yet. Because I guarantee there is definitely a lot more about this film that I can say than in the time allotted. But for today, I would like to focus on two different astounding aspects of Spider-Man 2. First is the framework. Spider-Man 2 is a film that captures visual storytelling at its finest. From the camera movement to the lighting, the overall cinematography complements the story in such a way that creates another unseen character for the audience to interact with. The camera. Combined, the camera's movement and lighting create a camera or frame of the story that has personality. We as an audience feel what the on-screen characters feel at any given moment because of said frame. Through the happy and warm feelings of an unrequited love standing in your doorway, finally requited, to the cold and doubting light of the night and its troubles that may come with you. The lighting behind the framework of the camera captures this for the audience. That, along with the camera movement. The camera at times remains in place and moving right along with the characters. It is not passive, though in fact it is the opposite. It is actively engaged with the characters in the story. It is an active frame. With such an active frame, the audience can almost feel every emotion the characters feel, from a gradual wide shot to an extreme close-up between two romantic interests to quick pulls between a fantastical brawl. The camera movement conveys it all. The second aspect of Spider-Man 2 that I would like to speak of today is the subversion. Subversion within storytelling is prevalent throughout Spider-Man 2. The film literally opens with not Spider-Man stopping some kind of serious crime like a bank robbery, but with Peter Parker delivering pizzas to a pretentious person of a receptionist. This is a subversion of the classic superhero story opening scene of our hero saving the day in a relatively standard way. We as the audience would be expecting the hero's life to be peachy and peaceful at the start of the story, but for Peter Parker within Spider-Man 2, that's not the case at all. In the story of the Spider-Man 2 film, Peter struggles with destiny and duality. Peter struggles with destiny always keeping his desires for a normal life just out of reach. From him not reaching a plate of appetizers at a gala in time to not being able to go to his crush's play, the duality of being Spider-Man and wanting such a life is played up so well that it extends to other characters. The background characters of Spider-Man 2 are insane. They contain personalities and stories that just might warrant spin-off subplots and shorts. Each character is brimming with personality and are always bold enough to show it. While Peter, and like most people within the audience, are afraid of showing who they really are. Something that is not really used today is this aspect of making background characters more lively than the protagonist out of fear for making them more interesting than the protagonist themselves, which I think is just a bunch of malarkey, considering that in the way that it is used here within Spider-Man 2, it actually bolsters the audience's engagement with Peter, because we feel what Peter feels. We feel how we cannot truly be ourselves every now and then, and so does Peter. But overall, framework and subversion work well enough together within the context of Spider-Man 2 to help engage with audiences on higher emotional levels. Techniques that aspiring storytellers and writers should, like the film itself, take to heart. Spider-Man 2 was only the second Spider-Man film to ever be released in the world, well, ever. But it is still considered one of the best superhero films of all time. And not just that. I once heard a story from a friend of mine who had the ultimate privilege of watching Spider-Man 2 in theaters. They said that when they went to go watch Spider-Man 2, they went to go see it with their father. And that after the movie ended, his father said, and I quote, "Wow, that wasn't just a great superhero movie. That was also a great movie." As my friend says, this line stuck with them. And I have to say, this friend of mine also helped me in finding more things about this film in some of our many discussions regarding what this film and how it really works on a storytelling and engaging level really is. Spider-Man 2 is a film that I feel like is underrated in terms of everything Spider-Man related, and in terms of everything Marvel comic book related, and in terms of everything superhero related. Because now we have had two other live action Spider-Man performances from two different actors and two different sets of continuity. And I chose Spider-Man 2 today to help bring back a sense of appreciation for one of the most influential superhero films of all time, and for also a film that I believe helped create the type of film that most of us crave today. The type of film that involves an interpersonal story that may be relatable for some, but may also be endearing to others. This has been Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouman on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.